equity is the best exit strategy. I mean, yeah. I think, you know, we talk about, oh, I'm going to lease option it, I'm going to wholesale it, I'm going to rent it, I'm going to do whatever I'm going to do. The fact that your tenants are paying down your mortgage every single month, regardless of the cash you might be putting in your pocket, is just, I feel, the most overlooked aspect of the whole thing.
Welcome to the Threefold Real Estate Investing Podcast. This is the podcast where you'll not only learn how you can achieve massive success in multifamily real estate investing, but also how you can simultaneously pursue great relationships with your family and a better walk with God. You can achieve financial freedom through real estate investing without sacrificing the relationships that mean the most to you. Now, here's your host, Lee Yoder.
Welcome back, Threefold listeners. I hope you're having a great week this week. We've got another great guest today, a local guy just on the west side of Cincinnati. Dave Hildebrandt is joining us today. A little bit about Dave, and then we'll bring him in. So he's been a full-time real estate investor since Halloween of 2017. That sounds ominous. But he was born and raised in Cincinnati, went to Ohio State, so he's a Buckeye. Love that. Met his wife for 14 years there. He managed to put his communications degree to work by parking cars at the Kenwood Country Club. Yes, and that's probably not what he had in mind, but we'll get into that. Then he did 8 years in the car business at Jaguar Land Rover in Cincinnati. Thanks in part to his ADHD, he was unceremoniously fired in 2017, hence the starting real estate on Halloween of 2017. So he began his real estate investing career in earnest, and he's been doing it ever since. He currently has a rental portfolio of 50 units and also does a couple, two, three flips a year. So, Dave, anxious to get into your story more, you know, hear more about you, but thanks for coming on the show today. It's a pleasure having you on.
Yeah, man. I definitely am a frequent listener of the podcast. Every time it shows up in my feed, I think you do an awesome job. And
no, thank you.
It's nice to be here to have an outlet just to share your story. Maybe it helps even one person and, you know, I can pay it forward a little bit.
Yeah. I think we can do that. With your story and your experience and the knowledge you've gained. So Dave, let's go back real quick. Let's work on bringing everybody up to speed to where you are today. Cause I really want to talk about how you've constructed your portfolio and how you've held on to it. And like really the true buy and hold strategy and holding long-term and building equity that way. But before we get into that, maybe just give us provide a little more color around getting let go from that job, having a family and jumping right into real estate. How did you get that going?
I've been in the car business for a while. And I actually left Jaguar for like a 3-month hiatus and came back at a totally different position. And I only lasted in that for about 4 or 5 months. It was very hard to be much lower on the ladder than I was when I left. And so this sort of yearning inside of me to like go out and do something different was, you know, fostered by, I think, you know, a lot of the books that people start out with, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Richest Man in Babylon, that kind of thing. At the time, October 2017, we had one duplex in Norwood to our name. And I had analyzed maybe, 80 or so deals or properties in order to find that one duplex. And I think it made me like $350 a month. So it was not enough to quit a job on, certainly. But, you know, it was fortunate timing because we ended up finding a house to flip that a friend of mine had too many flips on their plate. And said, hey, do you want to take this one on? And my wife, somehow I convinced her to let me cash in like $83,000 out of a retirement account. And so we flipped that property and I think I made 40, 45 grand. And in my mind, you know, I was rich. Like I was never going to need to work again because when you work in the rat race, you never save any money. So you never have any money in the bank. So when all of a sudden you got $100,000, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm set for life. And I think we spent that money that whole summer. We went on 3 vacations and Kings Island every weekend. And I was like, oh, and all of a sudden I look at my bank account. It's like, oh boy, that money was
going fast.
Was gone. It was gone like that. So I sort of decided at that point, I said, well, I've got to do something for the long haul, because if I'm not going to go back to work, it's great to make a little money here and there on flipping a property, but only so many deals come across your desk. And so that was one of the things I had shared with you about my exit strategy was you have to do the right thing with each one of these properties in order to maximize your return, because you don't know when the next one is coming down the pipe. So I kind of flipped my mindset over to, well, I have to replace this retirement account that I just liquidated, and I also need money every month to live. So my first deal was an 8-unit building with a single family adjacent in Reading that I still own to this day. And I got a partner in on that who was the best man at my wedding. We were friends from college. He was a dentist. And he was looking at buying some turnkey real estate up in Indianapolis. And I said, hey, why don't you put that money towards this? I think I can get you, you know, a way better return.
Yeah.
And so we paid $325 for those units. Now there's 9 units in the building. And I think the gross rents across that 9 units plus the house is about $7,800 a month. So
It's a 2% deal then.
It's beyond a 2% deal at this point.
Yeah.
And so, you know, having those cornerstones to kind of build your business on was a great way to learn and cut my teeth and sort of get a foundation of, okay, this can really work. And I mean, it only paid me maybe $800 or $1,000 a month net, but it was like, oh, well, we just got to go do this a few more times
right. And
we'll be good to go.
Yep. Yeah. And it's $1,000 a month. So 12 grand a year. Yeah. Still not replacing your income, not setting anybody up, setting the world on fire, but it's 12,000 every single year instead of that flip got you 40,000, but just one time. Didn't do you anything, do anything for you next year, the year after that. And like you said, you got to go keep finding those. Once you get that 8-unit, now 9 units, you never have to find it again as long as you hold it. It's just going to keep spitting out, you know, 12 grand a year.
Exactly.
And then, yeah, I like the idea of the partnering too, Dave. So you go to a partner that's got the money and not the time. You've got the time and not the money. And so did you just kind of go 50-50 on that? Like he brings the money, you bring the deal and the hustle.
Yeah.
Simple JV.
Yeah. I think who you partner with is important. And so for me, I didn't want like a partner that was going to be involved on an everyday basis.
Yep.
I wanted a guy, and to this day, every month I send him his direct deposit for his proceeds, his draw
distribution.
I send him he gets a little, preferred return on all the stuff we own together. We've gone on to buy 22 units together.
That's awesome.
And so he gets a little bit of a preferred return. I send him that, and I send him literally take a screenshot or a camera shot with my phone of the bank accounts. Here's our statement. Here's what we got in the bank. Here's what the plan is. And that's it. Like that's all the involvement that he has. He loves that the checks show up every month.
Sure.
And he doesn't have to do anything. It's just free income for him.
Yeah, Dave, I like to share this a lot. I tell people all the time, like if you want to build cash flow fast, and you want to build a nice little portfolio, especially you manage your own stuff, Dave.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. I say, especially if you're going to manage your own stuff, I don't think there's any better way than buying small multifamily. I think that is the best way to build a nice portfolio and cash flow really well. And doing it just as a simple JV, you know, with somebody that wants to bring the money and wants to be, like you said, Dave, more of the turnkey investor, which means to me, Dave, you know, you can add on to this, but just somebody that just wants to have their money working for them. They don't want to do any of the work. That's kind of turnkey, you know, that can mean different things to different people, but I just want to put my money in on a property that I don't have to do any work on. And it may not actually be a turnkey property, but you're the one doing the work, Dave. So it might as well be a turnkey because for him it is, he's just putting his money in and he's collecting, you know, distributions each month. But partnering up with somebody like that, and just doing a simple joint venture with them, putting an LLC together, buying a property together. And I'm like you, Dave, I think it works a lot better when there's just one person, you know, calling the shots, doing the work, you make all the decisions. You don't have two people trying to battle back and forth and trying to make decisions together. So, sounds like you built a really nice portfolio, Dave. So because in the beginning you didn't have a bunch of money, you needed monthly income, but you can only go so far again, unless you're flipping houses and you're recycling that money. Once you park it into an 8-unit, that money's going to sit there for a while. So you run out of money pretty quickly. So you're going to need partners to be able to build a portfolio to get started. Correct?
Yes. I mean, you know, he wrote a check for, I don't know, $72,000 to buy that place.
Yep.
And what's great about small multifamily, like you said, Lee, because I know you're big on the multifamily stuff too, is your drive, because you need money every month to eat, right? That's what you're, in my case, right? Without a job, other income, every dime that I could make out of that place was important. Well, the added benefit of that in a 5-unit and up is that you're also driving the NOI of the property and you're increasing the value. So, you know, you're making $50 more every month. That's 25 in my pocket and 25 in his pocket. But, you know, we multiply it by 12, that's $600. At a 10 cap, that's $6,000 in value. At a 5 cap, that's $12,000 in value, right?
Yep.
And all because I was, I don't say greedy, but I was driving to fulfill my needs of, I need more money every month to live. And the byproduct of that was, you know, we were building equity as we're going along. We're appreciating the value of that property drastically with those little changes. So like, that's why this was such a great deal to do first, because there was a basement unit that was unoccupied and it was never going to rent for what the, you know, what the normal apartments rented for, but we got it rented for $500 a month. And that was great. The old owner never reported any of the laundry income. Well, in a 9-unit building, I probably get $150, close to $200 a month in laundry income. Yeah. So I could put that in my pocket, but instead I'm going to report that, you know, on the ledger, and I'm driving value for that building as I'm taking those coins and, you know, spending them on McDonald's or whatever I was doing to eat in those early days. Yeah. So that small multifamily, like you said, your efforts are multiplied in what you're doing for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And just thinking about making that cash flow and building that quickly and how much you need that. And I want to get more into, so your strategy, Dave, you need the cash flow now. So I'm just, let's work this out. How does someone marry this up? If someone gets in their position that you're in, Dave, I would just imagine, because you're talking about building equity. So wasn't it tempting to harvest that equity after a year or so, 2 years of owning that 9-unit? I mean, 8-unit, you turned it into 9-unit. So man, I mean, you threw out that $500, you added $500 in rent. I mean, that's $6,000 a year. You know, like you said, at a 10 cap, you just added 60 grand. At a 5 cap, you added, you know, 1.2 or 120,000. So, it, you know, let's say it's somewhere in between, right? 85,000, something like that. 90,000 would be in between at a 7.5 cap, I guess. Weren't you tempted to go harvest that money? Like, man, I can have a big payday here and I can feel good again, feel comfortable, you know, provide for my family this way. How did you manage to hold on to these? Cause I think that's the temptation. It's really hard once you get a property and you add equity to not want to go get all that equity. Even if you don't want to spend it, it's like, man, but if there's, you know, in this example, like 90, you know, 150, whatever grand sitting here that I could harvest, I could go buy a couple more. Cause you told me you just bought one with 70. So I could go buy two with 150,000, right? So help me out with just where your mindset was, and was there that temptation, and how did you overcome that? How'd you keep going?
There's a couple things that I would say influenced that. One was I had a partner and his goals are different than mine. He's a dentist. He makes $200,000, $300,000 a year. He's up to 3 practices now. And so he didn't want to sell. There was no way he wanted to sell. He was getting check every month. He's taking depreciation. He's not, you know, he's not paying taxes on nearly the income that I'm sending him. And so he's loving it. And so, you know, I'm committed to my partner. I want him to put up money to go do more deals. Right. And so I want proof of concept. I want you to know that I'm in it for you as well. And so I was lucky that I got fired because I had all the time in the world. And so I was doing things. I would love to show you my Facebook Marketplace feed from circa 2018. I was refinishing furniture that I would get for free, and I was selling on Facebook Marketplace for a couple $100 here and there. My eBay business was gangbusters. I was, you know, buying discount clearance merchandise at Home Depot because I was there anyway, and I was selling it for 20 or 30 bucks on eBay. My wife started her own online business selling on Poshmark, and so it really was. That's what I'm referencing. And then some of the questions we talked about before we came on, you really have to be committed to building that equity and holding in order to see your wealth grow. Right. But I had liquidated my retirement. So I know as soon as I sell, I might get money now, but there goes my retirement.
Yep. Absolutely. Indeed.
Right. So those two things worked in my favor. The third thing was that I've been committed to from when I started was I have a pretty detailed schedule of real estate owned. And every month I'm updating what I think the value of my property is and what my mortgage payoff is. And it is a great exercise to see every month just how much pay down you've made. So I looked in January because I knew we were going to come on and talk. Just in January alone, I had $3,700 in pay down on my properties. And that's my half of what I own. So some of them I own outright. Nice. Yeah, some of them I own outright. And some of them are splits with other people. But that's my portion of equity. So if I hold again for February and don't sell, I'm going to be making $3,717 or whatever it's going to be, right? Yep. So keeping the eye on the prize and inspecting what I expect, keeping track of those things has really helped me to just sort of stay the course.
Yeah. So because on that 3,700 per year, we're talking, you know, was it roughly 45,000, you're just reminding yourself, hey, even though I'm not seeing this yet, my portfolio is making me 45 grand a year. Again, that's just what you don't see. So you don't get to realize that yet, but you're just reminding yourself, hey, I'm making 45 grand a year. Every year I hold this and pay down debt, I'm making 40. It's almost like you're saying, Dave, I'm putting 45,000 into my IRA.
Exactly.
Right? Like you're building it that way. Okay. That's a great reminder. I like that.
What's nice lately is the left-hand column, the pay down, what I owe has been going this way. And the right-hand column, the building value because of inflation, especially has been going this way. Right. Yeah. So my equity has been multiplied by what's going on in the marketplace. And while I can't go necessarily find more great deals because they're expensive, once again, the number on the right-hand side is going this way and the number on the left-hand side is going that way. So I'm multiplying the effects of holding on to the property.
Right. Yeah, that's so good. I love the hustle that you had there, Dave. And I think, you know, if people are willing to do that, or I think the other way to do it, Dave, let me know what you think, like, is if you have a job that can be very flexible, you start getting in slowly and then you don't have the need to sell because you've got that income. Or if one spouse has a full-time job, the other one doesn't, and it's the other one that's getting into real estate full-time, but you've got the one spouse's income, or you go part-time. It's just, I'm just thinking, if you can do those things, then that allows you to hold, because at some point, if you can't bring in income, you may be forced to sell something. But Dave, you guys were doing everything, scraping and clawing everything you could to make income to allow you to hold that portfolio. And I mean, you're telling us the benefit of it today. You're paying down, you know, $45,000 worth of debt. You own, you know, a really nice portfolio that's putting out, you know, good numbers for you. And I'm assuming, Dave, today, like, just the rental income, you probably do have a pretty decent living that you've got off your portfolio today.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm a very cautious owner. And so I think there's 54 doors now.
Yeah.
Across those doors, we probably have, $110,000 in reserves.
Nice. That's great.
For all those buildings, right? And so the reason for that, once again, is I have other people that I need to protect.
Yeah.
They have put up money. And, you know, if we were ever to run into a situation where there's, you know, massive vacancies or high vacancy rates, you know, we're protected. We're not going to have to sell those places. But it also is nice because those reserves can help me, you know, even out. And so, you know, if I need to draw a little bit extra money one month, well, if I need to take $3,000 out of a property, all I have to do is send my partner $3,000 and everything's good.
Yes.
And they don't care. They're happy to take it. It's not like we're liquidating an account, but reserves trump everything in terms of security. Oh, man.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You don't want to do a capital call. I mean, that'd be the other way to do it is you're going to your partner. Hey, kind of getting low on reserves. We need to put some more money in. You'd much rather.
No way. Like I said, I want that person to be as divorced from the property as possible, right? Like, I don't want it to be on their mind. It's just they get a tax return and they get checks in the mail every month. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Dave, have you refinanced at all? Have you done that to harvest some of the equity or not even that? You'd like to continue to see that pay down?
We only refinanced one of the properties that we have. So a lot of the stuff I have is seller financed.
Awesome.
We have several units that are on seller finance notes. And then, two of the bigger buildings I have over in Cheviot, there's an 8-unit and a 4-unit. They're across the street from each other. We had a great loan deal worked out that just kind of fell through. And so we had to go with, I can't remember who it was, not that I should name him anyway, but a local lender that was just way more expensive. And so we refinanced that about 2 years in, and I actually paid a 2% penalty. You know, they had a prepayment penalty.
Yep.
But my owner, my partner and that just left his money in the deal. So that, you know, our payment actually went down substantially because our interest rate got way better.
Makes sense.
And so he wanted, that was what I was saying before, he gets a preferred return on one of the buildings. So he's like, I'm just going to leave my money in because I'm getting that 5% preferred as opposed to taking it out and not getting that anymore. So I was like, that's fine. Right. You know, we cash flow more. I mean, it was really a sort of a, you know, if he took his money out, we would make $375 less every month. So it kind of is a wash, but, it worked for him psychologically. So that's what we did.
I love to talk to the guys and girls out there that are thinking they might, you know, want to do what you did. I think, you know, a lot of people are in a job that they really hate, that doesn't fit them. Maybe they've got something going on. It's not a good fit. I mean, you kind of had both. It sounded like you had that job that wasn't working out, but then you also were drawn to real estate. And so if somebody's in that same situation, I think, you know, we kind of talked about, like you said, it was a blessing in disguise. It was kind of the silver lining for you to get fired. Maybe other people don't have that, but maybe again, if you've got a spouse, one of you works, but one of you can jump off and go full time, or what, you know, you go part time, something like that. I think that's step one, is that you've got to have the time to go out and do it and hustle. It sounds like step two would would often be getting that money partner. Would you agree? Do I have the first couple steps right? Or how would you suggest someone go ahead and get started building a portfolio like you have?
I mean, that was the path that I took. Mm-hmm. I think the beautiful thing about real estate is there are about a zillion ways to get involved.
Yep.
And I think it's about leveraging whatever assets you have. So after I got fired and I didn't have a $12,000 or $14,000 a month income anymore, that wasn't an asset that I could leverage, right?
Right.
But I know a lot of times husband and wives, one partner is super into, I really want to do this. And the other partner is a little bit hesitant.
Right.
And so, you know, if you both have jobs, being a, for lack of a better term, credit horse, if you will, right? Somebody who has a W-2 job and great credit that is entering the partnership opposite from me, not the guy that's managing every day.
Yeah.
Right. But you have some money to invest in passively. But unlike my partner, maybe you do want to learn and you want to be more intrinsically involved and tied to the deal a little bit more. Make sure you're doing that. You're asking questions. You're, you know, learning about fixing up apartments before they rent again. You're doing market analysis to see what apartment will rent for, all those kind of things that being even a passive owner gives you a real opportunity to do. It's not just an exercise mentally anymore. It's an actual investment, right? And so, you know, for me, it was buying that first duplex while I was still working. And there's that first moment. I know you had this moment too, where your tenants send you checks every month. Like the very first time you get two checks in the mail for $700 a piece or whatever I got off that first duplex. And I'm like, holy heck, these people actually will just send you money every month. This is unbelievable, right?
Yep.
And you've got to have that experience before you're like, okay, this is actually going to work. Because if you are inactive, if you haven't moved yet on whatever you want to do, the reason is in your mind, the cons outweigh the pros. That's the only reason you haven't move forward, right?
Yep.
So you have to get across that threshold. You have to experience those pros and feel like they're in abundance before you're going to overwhelm the negative side of you and move forward.
Yeah, that's a good point. And Dave, as I'm thinking about like just building that portfolio and people getting into this, I mean, the thing I keep coming back to is like you talking about going through your real estate schedule, because I still have this, even buying, you know, bigger apartments, it is difficult to want to sell and harvest equity sometime. But I just keep thinking about the fact that you're doing that. I would imagine, again, it's such a good exercise to see it grow. Like you said, you're growing on both ends. You're growing in the value of your portfolio. Your 53, 54 unit portfolio keeps getting more valuable, but also the amount you owe on it is going down. So your equity is growing because you know, you're moving on both ends in the right direction. And I would think that helps because if you look back and you've been in it 6 years now, or it'll be 6 years this October, you can look back and say, man, like it was tough in 2020 or 2021. It was tough to not sell. But man, if I go back and look, like here's what I could have sold for then. And here's what I owe. Like I would have harvested that equity. But today, because I've held, man, now I've got even more equity. Like, so I would imagine it's so helpful to keep your eye on the prize. Again, it helps to have, you made a good point that it helps to have the right partner, or the partner that, you know, really, I mean, he doesn't need the income. That's going to hurt him, right? Like it's going to probably bump him up into a different tax bracket, and he's gonna have to pay a lot more taxes, right? So you're right. He's got almost no incentive to sell unless he feels like he needs to spend more than $200,000 or $300,000 a year. Then he might, but he doesn't. So again, you got the good motivation, but I think you're helping yourself keep your eye on the prize or just keep focused on the goal, which is the long term. Like you said, I mean, I think it goes all the way back to, you know, when you pulled $80,000 out of an IRA to say, hey, that helped us this year. We had a fun year. But we don't have 80,000. Like, what's retirement look like? What's our kids' future look like? But you're able to keep going, man, I feel like I'm making the right decisions every year, because every year, every month I'm looking and we're growing in the right direction.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I've flipped a ton of properties along the way.
Yeah, good point.
I mean, I have sold properties, but that was when I graduated from, okay, I can't be painting furniture in my garage to the tune of $40,000. It might make me $300 a week or something like that.
Yeah.
And driving for Amazon, all those kind of things, they kind of kept the ball rolling as the, you know, rental income came in. But if I was going to grow, you know, you needed to amass some capital. Yep. And so there are deals, 3901 Darwin Avenue, 3414 Glenmore, 4414 Kanker, like these buildings that I bought that I wish I would have held on to today, because like you just said, at the time I sold and I made $40,000 or $50,000. But now if I look, there's $50,000 more in equity in every one of those properties, right? And I don't own them anymore.
Yep.
But you know,
you do need the three cash too.
Yeah, I got three kids and a wife that stays at home. And so now my sort of focus has shifted geographically, and I really am only active and holding in four zip codes, which are right around my house: 452-48, 238, 211, and 233.
Yep.
Those are the only places I want to hold. So if I come up with a deal out in Silverton or Evendale or whatever, Springdale, I'm going to fix the thing up and I know I'm going to sell it, just because for my long-term buy box, those don't fit. I want stuff that's 10 or 8 minutes from my house, because
that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Because
you're managing it. Yep.
Yeah. I'm managing. So I have a full-time admin that lives down the street from me, and she handles all my like logistical stuff, taxes, invoicing, bills, all those kind of things. And I just pay her on the hour, and she probably works for me 15 or 20 hours a week. And then I have a full-time maintenance contractor guy who's my jack of all trades, do it all guy. And then I have another part-time maintenance guy for plumbing and electrical stuff that I might need.
Awesome.
So I'm not like in there fixing stuff myself.
Hey, Threefold listeners, just wanted to take a quick second here to promote our sponsor, a company that I'm a big fan of. I've done a lot of business. I'm a very happy customer of Prominent Title Agency. They are a full-service title and escrow company licensed in Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, Tennessee, Michigan, and Florida. They handle commercial transactions of all types and sizes, including multifamily, retail, industrial, hotels, medical buildings, restaurants, gas stations, golf courses. They are very experienced and efficient in handling large portfolios, including multiple properties and or multi-states, as well as entity transfers in Ohio. My guy over there is Rob Calabrese. He is the division director for Prominent Title Agency's commercial real estate division. Being a licensed attorney and title agent in Ohio and Kentucky, Rob has strong knowledge of the complex world of commercial real estate. He also offers legal services in all aspects of commercial real estate. Guys, I've worked with Rob a lot. We're getting a deal under contract now, and I told the broker, I said, man, I really want to work with Prominent Title. Just trust those guys over there. They're great. They're quick. Love working with those guys. Now, back to the show. As we're wrapping up here, what would you say is the key ingredient for being a successful real estate investor, you know, like you?
Equity is the best exit strategy. I mean, I think, you know, we talk about, oh, I'm going to lease option it, I'm going to wholesale it, I'm going to rent it, I'm going to do whatever I'm going to do. The fact that your tenants are paying down your mortgage every single month, regardless of the cash you might be putting in your pocket, is just, I feel, the most overlooked aspect of the whole thing. The wealth that you can build there, and the fact that you can see it on paper. I mean, it's not like it's elusive. It's not out there.
Right.
It's something to be sort of discerned out of thin air. I mean, you can see the pay down every month. The place is not going to be worth less than what you paid for it.
No.
Right.
No.
So let's kind of start there. And putting the tenants to work for you while servicing their needs, obviously, so that they're happy and they want to stay and keep making payments, I think is... That's the key to success for the long term, and build yourself a foundation. I mean, for 2 or 3 or 4 years, you know, I was on shaky ground in terms of, if I didn't do another flip or find the next big money injection, you know, I might have to go back to selling cars. You know, now with the foundation underneath me, there's you know, nothing that can happen. I can go down to 60% occupancy on my stuff and still break even, and not have to touch any of my money to make a mortgage payment. So, but I just want to circle back to what you said, because I do think it's very important that, you know, with these smaller multifamilies, I would encourage people to get into 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12 unit buildings. And the reason for that is there's always going to be something you can do to drive the value, to increase rents, to lower expenses, because the reason the last guy is selling is because, you know, he's probably not as happy with the building as he could be. And so if you're willing to just go in and make those little changes, there's always going to be money that you find. So even if you're, as long as you're paying a price that makes sense to start with, you know, that blue sky, it's always going to be there in something. Finishing out the basement apartment, reporting the laundry income, you know, putting ceiling fans in people's living rooms and raising their rent $50 or whatever it is, right?
Right.
There's always that incremental thing you can do. And that's where you find that big, and that's how you ensure that you're protecting your investment by raising the value of that property.
Yep. Yeah. Really well said. I like that. You're right. There's always something, and typically, the person selling, there's a reason, especially I think just some of those, like the smaller multis, that's, you talk about buying from mom and pop or whatever, that's what that's going to be. Institutional big business, like they're not going to buy the small stuff. And that's why there's often a lot of opportunity. That's why I think you and I are both saying like, that's a great place to go.
I have found every single one of the properties I bought, except for one, from direct marketing. I mean,
okay.
I'm sending my own letters. I'm typically targeting absentee owners who've owned the property for more than 7 years. I go on List Source. I buy the list. It costs me 0.03 cents a record or 3 cents a record, whatever it costs. And I have a letter that I send out and it just says, hey, my name's Dave. My wife and I live in the neighborhood, because I only send in my geos, right?
Right. Yeah. There's four zip codes. Yeah.
Right. And so I'm not Lee Yoder, bigtimeinvestmentcompany.com, right? I'm just a regular guy who lives down the street with three kids. And, you know, we're looking to add a couple properties this year. Maybe you'd be interested in selling. So my letter is very simple. It's very, for lack of a better term, neighborly. But mm-hmm. that direct Love marketing it. Has allowed me to find every deal that I've ever done, except for one. So
that's awesome. Yeah, no, good stuff. And I think a lot of those people would rather sell to somebody like you, to sell somebody neighborly. So it's really, really good stuff there. It's a good tip.
Not like you. You know what I mean? Not yeah, like no, no. LeeYoder.com.
Nope. Exactly. No, that's definitely, it really is true. Hey, Dave, as you gotten this going, you know, I'm always interested in what's that meant for my guests, you know, family, faith, if it's important to them. But what would you say is a key ingredient to making sure, you know, while you're going through this journey and, you know, you've had a pretty pretty crazy journey into real estate. I mean, just because you jumped right in and kind of had to make it work. How have you made sure that you're having success outside of real estate with your wife, with your kids? What's maybe a key ingredient there to making sure you're having success with the things that are more important than real estate?
Well, first of all, I don't know that it would work with anybody else except for Maureen Hildebrandt, because she's been very, very understanding of all my whims. That's awesome. and different turns along the way. But I will go to my grave saying that real estate saved my marriage to some extent, because previously, I worked 60 hours a week. I was working every Saturday. I was making great money, but my wife would stay at home. And we had two, three kids at the time when I finally left. Yeah. And we lived separate lives, right? Like I'd come home after 11 or 12 hours at the dealership and it was like, all right, I'm going to eat dinner and I'm going to take a shower and I'm going to go to bed. And so we were very, distant is the right word, but disconnected, I think is the right term. And so real estate allowed me to control my own schedule. It allowed me to make time for her and prioritize her. And it's still that way to this day. I can, you know, she can call me up and say, well, do you want to go to lunch? Well, sure. Yeah. Like I'll scrap whatever else I'm doing. Yep. Lee Yoder and the Threefold Podcast, they can wait. Right.
Exactly.
And I would never back burner you, but the fact that I was able to, you know, make my own schedule, prioritize my life in whatever order I saw fit, has led me to way more happiness with her, with my kids, with my extended family as well.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. I don't know that I could do it if I was back to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, man. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I mean, you guys put in the hustle, put in the work, took the risk. But man, I'm so glad it paid off. And it does. I mean, like you said, you couldn't do it with just anybody. It takes a great partner to be able to do something like this, even if they're not involved. I mean, they have to be on board for it. They have to be up for taking the risk. They have to be up for draining, the 401k IRA, if that's what it takes. They have to be up for kind of making the leap. So yeah, good for you, man, to have found a great partner.
I certainly know that's the same for you. I mean, I see the things that you share about your wife and kids, you guys are all involved in your business. Mm-hmm. I know around the holidays, especially, but it really becomes about the family. And so having the right partner is necessary. But I will say, without me proving the concept, probably wouldn't be having this discussion. So some performance is required in order to merit the leash, right? In order to let you go out and do your thing. At some point, you've got to be able to write a check or prove that this is going to work. So
some point, yeah. Some point, some food has to show up on the table.
Exactly.
You can't just do it for fun. Well, good stuff, Dave. Hey, I know you gave us 2740properties.com, not on social media. You are on Facebook. So people just look you up there by name, but just check out the website there. That's the best place for people to kind of maybe find out more about you.
Yeah. So a lot of people struggle with that number because they want to say 2470.
I know.
But if you wanted to make $1 million a year, Lee, you need to make $2,740 a day. So that's where the number comes from.
Interesting. I like that.
Yeah. But they could just email me even. It's Dave, real simple, Dave at 2740properties.com. I'm happy to, you know, help them out with a deal or provide some insight or grab lunch or coffee or, you know, whatever it is. Because there's been a lot of people that have helped me along the way. I didn't learn this stuff, you know, on my own. Sure. People have certainly provided me information and assistance, and I'm always happy to pay that forward because it has been, I know for you as well, you know, life changing in a big time positive way.
Yeah. You and I were at the same meetup with the Cincinnati Rhea for a while. We were meeting at Papa John's, right?
Oh, yeah.
Or La Rosa's. I love me La Rosa's, not Papa John's. La Rosa's. Yeah.
La Rosa's. I'm a thick crust guy. I don't know about you, but I like the pan pizza.
always thick crust. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, good stuff. Well, Dave, hey, before I let you go, this has been awesome, man. Before we let you go, I always like to ask, how might my listeners and I be praying for you in the coming weeks?
So, I mean, a lot of people know I have a genetic heart condition. I'm post-op for 10 years now. So everything is pretty good on my end. My outlook is pretty good. Mm-hmm. I would just ask, actually my brother-in-law, who I'm really, really close to, his father back in Italy is suffering big time from dementia and some other things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I don't know that I really need many prayers compared to him. So his name's Luigi, just like Mario's brother. And, He could certainly use some prayers.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I know that's really tough. Dementia is really tough to lose, kind of slowly lose a family member, right? It can be just really tough. So we'd be happy to pray for Luigi and his family. But
yeah, I appreciate it. Stuff.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Hey, this has been great, man. I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much, Lee. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, take care.
Thank you for joining us for another great episode. I hope you'll take action on what you've learned today. If you enjoyed today's show, please consider leaving Lee a 5-star rating and review. And check him out on threefoldrei.com. Until next time, 1 Timothy 6:17.